not disciplined me for this, let me not change it to what they might have changed me or the same name. Yeah, it's possible. Really, it's possible that it might come with another name. when he was like in the chapters of the committee from the Norfolk province.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon. My name is Lydia Mshuri. I'm coming from the Free State Province. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Before I hand over the DJ to you, I'm going to request Honorable Mshuri to give us the correct statement. Can you say it? It will be unfair, really.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. The new surname is Honorable Mutimbo, but I like this one of Mshuri. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ted. Alec Moemi, Sports and Recreation Program.
Thank you, Chip, and members and colleagues. Mayor Khan, Sport and Recreation South Africa.
Bernard Sonashoy, the Strategic and Legislative Support in Sports and Recreation South Africa.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Member Makutu Matana, Finance for the Recreation.
Good afternoon. This is Tim Matetwa, the Coordinator Advisor for the Committee.
Good afternoon, honourable members and the officials of the government, Lena Sofile, the representative for the committee.
Federation of the Year, and you may recall that Triple G took the theme of netball, and this one takes the theme of tennis because tennis was Federation of the Year. So with this report, Chair, we recite in terms of the mandate, which I would not bore the committee with because that remains the same and has not changed. And the political leadership as well as the administration remains the same. We still have more or less similar structure except for the few amendments were made to the structure during the review. And the strategic intent of the department has remained the same. We have refined this mandate, as you may be aware, in terms of the sport and recreation plan. But we remain committed to an active and a winning sporting nation, as well as our paid off line for the HQ. That still guides all the work that we do. Of importance is that the department now, in terms of the current structure, we have noticed that it is inadequate and inappropriate. I had in the previous briefing session to this committee indicated that we had done the restructuring process. We have completed that process. We are now awaiting approvals for the new structure from DPSA as well as the National Treasury. We have since submitted our plans in this regard. It does look like we will move to what is called a blind structure, meaning that we will have two structures, two organograms, one that is active with active budget system, which is fully funded and which we will fund, and the one that we know is pre-approved but will not have money to fill the vacancies. So that's the type of scenario we are looking at. And further to this, we are now in the process of filling all the vacancies. We have committed that before the end of the financial year we will fill the vacancies. I think the challenge for us has been the process of the unions of negotiation and the approval of the structure. We have placed a voluntary moratorium on appointments pending the finalization of this, and this has had some negative effect on us because there have been difficulties with filling some vacancies, and our attrition rate this year under review was very, very high. We lost a number of staff members and we were not replacing people as quick as we were losing them. But of importance is that close the gaps that we had identified in terms of skills and the weaknesses of our units not working together. The top management meeting decided to rotate directors September 25th. And that rotation did occur, and most staff members have now found themselves more comfortable in the new areas of work we have assigned to them as a consequence. So we believe that we should now finalize this and make it a permanent internal movements of staff and directorate, and this has now added a lot of things to the work that we are doing. From a point of view of the implementation of the National Sport and Recreation Plan, as members may be aware, this year, 2013, was the first year in which we essentially began the process of implementing the sports plan. And the alignment, however, still experienced some disjuncture because the new budget structure, we were on the old budget but with new priorities. And this created some degree of disjuncture. And the good thing is that now the new budget structure for the financial year we are in has been corrected and has been fully aligned. And I'm sure when we table the 2013-14 financial year, you will see the alignment proper. But of importance to us is that this work was work that was important in as far as the delivery of the sports plan is concerned. And we also, the minister appointed the National Implementation Committee, chaired by the Director General, together with all provincial heads of sport and other key stakeholders in this regard, including SASCOC. We had also began inculcating various partnerships. We had ironed out a lot of the difficulties the sector had experienced during this period, including reminding the work that we do and what SASCOC does. And this has become a key important issue because there has always been an overlap of mandate between us and SASCOC in some key areas. The good thing is that the sports plan has now managed to iron out all of that. If I can just give the committee an example, previously we granted the SASCOC funding purely for the sake of it, when giving the amount average of 12 million a year, and this is in a cycle
Olympic, which is every 4 years. So by the Olympic year, they had already received 48 million from us to prepare in South Africa, that is. But we were in no shape, no position to dictate, not to say to them how many medals they must give. In fact, we reached for us to tell us that we will get ourselves, and then we end up with six or whatever. But that now has changed. You will also see that the current agreement we signed with SASCO also has a target and also influences money and indicates where the bulk of the money is actually spent in this regard. So these partnerships are now taking off from that point of view. And we also began engagement with the Center for Scientific Industrial Research, which our intention really was to look at the proper business plan and that they support us with capacity in this regard. We began engagement in this regard. There is a draft agreement on the table, which we had also discussed with Science and Technology, and we're looking at the issue of co-funding for some of the major programs. All in all, we have identified 7 programs in terms of the business plan on which they will support us. One of them being on the scientific support program, the other being on the development of the geographical information system, which is an electronic system that will map all the sporting fields and stadia and everything for our country. So the costing of the plan also was completed during this year under review, and now we know with certainty that for us to implement this plan fully, we need an additional budget of about 3.6 billion every year. We only have just below 1 billion. And we are also of the opinion that because it has been indicated to us by Treasury that there will be no such money, we are now implementing the plan on an incremental basis. So while the plan requires us to do such and such, we are consciously deciding that some of those things are not going to happen now. And I think this is where the difficulty of having to choose what not to do has come for us. In other sectors, when it becomes very unpopular with people who we are now telling that this we are no longer doing, and therefore we are no longer financing this, and we are looking at new priorities. And, we have received letters and complaints and everything, but the plan is approved by cabinet. We have to implement it in an incremental manner, and there is no sufficient resources to implement all of it at the same time. In as far as the government structures and committees, we did establish two committees during this year under review. One of them was the committee, the interministerial committee, to prepare the AFCON or the African Nations Championship. As you know, it took place in January 2015 during the year under review. And it was quite a successful tournament. You would recall that 2 weeks before this tournament, all the press were writing that the stadiums would be empty, that the tournament would be very bad, and so on. And we immediately, to remember, in early January, did a lot of mobilization, particularly in the cities that were struggling, like Rustenburg, and also in Nelson Mandela Bay. And there too, despite the fact that this is not where Bafana Bafana were really based in Nelson Mandela Bay, we saw a good positive turnout. And also the strategy of insisting to camp that all games be a double header, so we reduce the number of measures to make sure that the tournament becomes short and also affordable, paid off in a big way, because then you had fans of 4 countries coming to the same stadium on the same day. And for one ticket and the price of one ticket, you are also entitled to see the other 2 nations play and who are in your group and who are competitors. And this way it also made sense for the city, because all 4 teams were camping in the same city and they were not going anywhere. So that worked very, very well, and the ministerial committee was very instrumental in succeeding in that. The other key thing that we also did was the AFCON deal, which was a marketing and promotion tool for South Africa at the match venue. And this worked out quite well. And we established that it was running programs on a daily basis during the entire duration of the tournament. We also facilitated successfully that the SABC should become the host broadcaster. As you may know, CAF has a media partner called Spotify. And Spotify is a company based in Europe, and they had appointed a company called Media Pro from France to come do broadcasting and everything here. So essentially, what we were being requested as an African country was to take taxpayers' money and pay CAF, who would then pay a European company for the services that are similar to what we have capacity as a country or state broadcaster to deliver these services. So it was a huge fight. So this is what made the issue of the marketing of the tournament much more heavier. But we were able to finally resolve this, and we had to find a way of kept putting out of their commitments to Media Pro and getting SABC to become the host broadcaster. And ever since then, we started publishing the program there. Again, one of the most important highlights of this year was the memorandum we signed with Takatsita. Takatsita is a sector education training authority responsible for about 3 chambers, culture arts, one chamber, tourism and hospitality the other, and the sports sector another chamber. This chamber on the sports sector, we were, since the inception of the CITAS, not that influential yet. And in early 2012, we changed the presentation on the board of the CITAS, and we had senior manager there, and we also changed the representation in the finance committee that does disbursements, so we can find better for them. And since then, that paid off in a big way because we were able to sign this. And the first program we ran with the CITAS was a postgraduate development program that looks at research for postgraduate students. There's a limited body of knowledge of research about South African sports. The bulk of the research we use and apply is research done international universities, and not very much coming from here. And equally, the 6 universities in our country that provide degrees in sport science and sport administration and so on don't really enroll many students at postgraduate studies, neither at master's level nor PhD. You rarely find people with doctorate in sports management. They do sport management as a junior degree, and then they branch on to do the other things later. So we had wanted to also reach that gap, increase and deepen the knowledge of sports in our country, and also help applied research. So the bulk of the topics we encourage students to select from were topics related to their sports plan, largely school sport. That's what we wanted to gather much more information. And we also allowed some deviations. For instance, there is a learner at the University of Pretoria who is researching around the youth camps that we run, and who is doing it as a longitudinal study, and also went and visited the camps last year. So there is such a useful research that is attending that will assist us in 2 to 3 years to start applying it well. So this program we launched in December, and by January 2030, we had enrolled 5 master's students and 10 PhD students. No, the other way around. 5 PhD students and 10 master's students were already enrolled for this program. We have sufficient money to actually enroll 20 master's and 10 PhD, but we found that because of this is not a fashionable area of study, so there were very limited people applying. So that's a great opportunity even for our members of the community who are studying further, PhD or master's in this. We will provide the bursaries from that point of view because they are open to everybody through this work. And it's a full cost bursary, we pay everything in that class. The other program that we also started is the National Sport Volunteer Corps program. During this period, we developed a system to register the national volunteers. The minister launched this program in February 2012, and that we will implement it in the new financial year, which is this year under review, April 2012 to March 2013. Since then, without us marketing, we have agreed that we will vigorously market it from April this year. But we have already exceeded the targets of what we had wanted. We have shown that in the first year, we'll register and train about 300 volunteers. But by end of this financial year, we had about 815 already registered on the program. And so these volunteers are former coaches, former players, retired sports administrators, and so on, who we bring back. We train them, first club coaching, framework level one, and then we later deploy them to schools to support their teachers in schools and to work with children in communities and in class. So that was that program there. The other program that we did and implemented was the HIRE project in London during the London Olympics. As you know, this is South Africa's home away from home, and we will share the full HIRE program and report with the community. We are doing another HIRE now for the Glasgow Games, This has proved quite popular, and for London, we also even managed to strike new partnerships. And we have like about 9 government departments and about 6 agencies of government participating in all of this and working with us on the ICAIA program. The other work we did during this period was to secure partnerships specifically on key programs. For instance, we worked with Social Task Force to support Netball for the first African Nemo challenge we introduced, and also for the basketball people. And we also had a partnership with the Italian business organizations. We established that partnership this year at the review with a view of supporting the school sports championships, and that went very, very well. With that, it saved us a lot of money. For instance, the whole local transportation of the school sports teams in 2012 December, Hanco gave us the things for free, you know, the buses for free, and they were transporting learners for free there. And we also had companies like Gachi giving ice cream to children for free and so on. And we also worked with Telkom and with SABC Sport to support the Soweto Tennis Open. And during this period, that open did take place and came there. We introduced the program called the Green Stars Program, which was a non-financial reward scheme for best performing employees. And that became a very popular program with the employees, and still remains a popular program. One of the new programs we also introduced as part of our Rise for New Recreation programs. Previously, we were doing very little of recreation. We only focused on sports. We introduced a program called the Deep Walk, and we wanted to make it a 10-city program. 8 of the 9 provinces participated, except one. I don't want to mention it. Except one. They didn't have the Deep Walk. But the rest of the other provinces did, and we nationally elevated the routine program to a national event, and we had here something this year under view about 5,000 people, but you see that there was a huge increase with 2013-14. We also introduced a new program, first one, the Things for Journal, which is a journal where we invite practitioners as well as professors in sport and so on to write articles on sport and review the specific policies and so on. It's a forum for debate because we also follow it with a seminar. We then invite the sports people and everybody, and invite the authors to come present their papers as well as the debate. And we are growing this concept in a big way because it has become very popular with international universities. So we are seeing a great group in terms of the growth of this. The other big thing we did this financial year was the introduction of the Little Green Book. This Green Book features the top 100 most influential personalities in sport. And we also provide their contact details and everything in it. The idea really is to promote networking amongst people who are influential. And, in fact, the big problem we have is that people are not fighting that some people in the book are not worthy to be there. But people are fighting that I am also influential, I want to be in the book, you know. So but they can only be 100. They can't be 101 or 107. There can only be 100, so at some stage it has to pass somewhere, and you may not end up in the book, and then people are so hating. And in 2013, we also had the South African Sports and Recreation Conference, SOSRECON. We had the 3 universities bidding for it, and ultimately, so I won the heat, and it was hosted there. A highly successful conference attended by sports practitioners as well as academics in sport, close to 300 participants, and of that about 45 from international universities and so on. So a good platform for exchanging information and deepening the debates within sports education and reviewing our policies. This one focused on the sports plan because it was quite and its implementation, and we also looked at comparative analysis with other policies of major and developed countries. Because we have been working with UK sport for a long time, we also invited many experts from the UK to present on their lessons in our sports plan and to do a review for us. We, for the first time of observed the International Move for Health Day. We observed it here in Manga, in Cape Town. A big aerobison, we took the format of an aerobison, but people were also able to check themselves there for various diseases and to check their levels of fitness. At the end of the day, it is done in patients. Some people that they put, they finish, you do school children, they finish, you do this, so on. By the end of the day, more than 7,000 people had gone through the recreational center in Langa Keta. We also held a celebratory dinner for Masha Maresia, the national women's hockey team captain, who is the longest serving national team captain across all our sports. She at every stage managed to achieve 300 checks, meaning that 300 formal matches representing South Africa as a professional. Across all codes, no other captain or player has so many hats, you know, and she's still serving. The good news is that just yesterday they finished the series, they beat up the NMS, the Belgium, and they won the series complete. So Masha still continues to contribute immensely to us. So we had a special dinner to recognize the effort and things during this financial year. The other new programs we also introduced was the Sporting Struggle Expedition. Sports in our country contributed immensely to the liberation movement, and there are many unsung heroes of the sports movement. Many people who youngsters will not see as heroes, and yet we have not been doing anything to bring this history to the forefront. There has been even other foreigners like Peter Hain, who campaigned immensely for the ban of the boycott of South African touring teams and the all-white rugby teams in Australia. He organized boycotts against the cricket teams in New Zealand. They were boycotted and all of this. And there were many other people, Chris Imbruglio, Dennis Brutus, and so on, Salam Saini, who left us unsung heroes in our country. And to that extent, we in all the nine museums, provincial capitals, we held the Sporting Struggle Exhibition. The exhibition is still there. This year we have grown it. We have decided to change the strategy, make one national big exhibition, and make one touring exhibition that will go right round, right through there. So, and that exhibition will also go to the IKAIA in Glasgow this year. So, this now is a revamped exhibition, and there are many names, so we'll always have new people. For instance, just found out about Jake Dewey, who was a boxer in the 1950s, the first black man to win the FIA title. You know, that is the forerunner to the Commonwealth Games. And during that time, can you imagine how difficult it must have been for him? He had to leave and fight his qualifying fight in Zambia, and then also had to go to the U.S. for that fight. So it, those type of people are some unsung heroes, and we, through this exhibition, honor them. We also made a year announcement at the end of 2013 that we'll be launching the Basketball National League. That was just the media announcement, but the league then took place in the current financial year, and it soon then was completed. Furthermore, we also began a review of the club development approach, where we said we are not running a pilot, and I'm glad to say that the pilot is underway, both in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal. In Limpopo, in the Mbani district, rural site, and in KwaZulu-Natal, Echekwini, an urban node. So we want to see the lessons both in Aruga and Nagano. So that too started in 2013 and has continued. It's now under implementation of our commitment. One of the things that we also started work around was the lack of access to facilities, and this still remains a big delivery objective from ours, but you may have seen that we have injected a lot of energy into this. Last year we started work this financial year review. We started the team to review the facility strategy, and now I'm proud to announce that in the current financial year, we have now analyzed the national facilities plan. We have finished the grading and classification framework. We have finished everything that has to do with this, and we are working on the GIS system with CSIR as I said. But of importance is that the so-called Tier 1 facilities, we have been enrolling them in the nest. So the multi-purpose what course, which we believe in terms of the national international non-stop standards, but there must at least be one per ward. We are partnered to work around that. And to this end, I'm sure you also know that we are working on the MRG. We spoke with Treasury, we engaged each other in our plans and grants. They made us work with lightning speed. It normally takes about 3 years to start a grant from scratch, from conceptualization to implementation. But they made us, gave us only 5 months to work on the new grant, the consolidated MIG, the 15%. We did that, and we finished the thanks to Sumaya. Within 4.5 weeks, we had done the first draft. By the 3rd month, we had something to give to the Treasury, and by the 4th month, we were done. So we didn't even take the whole 5 months. We worked flat day and night to get that for good. And then we were only disappointed by them. They told us, in October last year, that they will no longer give us the first tranche of money because of the economic downturn in April this year. We were supposed to receive the first tranche, the first 1 billion of this in April this year. But then they left that we will review again in October this year, meaning that they are preparing to give us the money in April 2015. So if that happens, and in April 2015 we are given the 2 billion to roll out facilities for sport, this will be the big game changer in as far as all facilities in our country. But despite these limitations, we have not folded our arms. We are engaged with the metros, engaged with municipalities. This current financial year, 2013-14, we also signed an agreement with wide open spaces, by which we are also piloting plus recreational centers in Kaubeng. So we are taking it from that point of view. We are implementing. And we also started rolling out the outdoor community gyms during this financial year. Let me now move to the issue of the academic system. As you are aware, in total, 1,424 athletes were supported through the academic system, and 50,242 athletes were supported within the structure development program. You also see that by this we had exceeded the target. I think for the athletes in the academy system, we had projected thousands during this financial year. And for the athletes in the structured development program, we had projected 10,000. But we had this financial year under review exceeded this target, and we went quite well about it. This now you recall that after we restructured the so-called residential program, which annually we kept about only 200 people, people like Castro Media and so on, and a few others who we thought are pipeline athletes who are supposed to become future medal contenders. So this system of investing so much money in so few people, as you may be aware, has not really yielded the fruits that we want. Many of these athletes, you don't even know them, you don't even know where they ended up, and they have millions of friends later, we have nothing to show for them. So we changed that, and then we began the so-called structured development program by which we give an athlete, you're not guaranteed money. We give you, according to your needs, if you are a footballer, your needs are the same as a running athlete. You know. For instance, marathon runners are the cheapest people you can support. You know. So they can't need running shoes and things. Off they go on the road, you know, so that's easier. And the scientific support involved in that is not that critical. But a creator is more expensive to put in a program and to provide all of these things and so on. So the balance has to be struck, and we have to look at the priority codes and say how do we do this. So we totally structured the whole program, and with it we were able to expand from about 200 a year, as you may see, to 1,000 in the equivalent of that type of program. More or less with the same resources, it's not like we increased the budget. More or less with the same resources, but we're able to achieve much better. As you know, I move quicker. Okay. All right. We are part of Outcome 12E, which, as you know, we have since then done a lot of work with arts and culture in terms of social cohesion. The one area share we have really struggled with was on the mass participation conditional grant. And you remember that this area was the area I also used to complain to the committee. And when I got the support of the committee that we shouldn't transfer money to provinces that are not compliant, that crisis ended. I think right now, under the this year under review. It was the first year we got zero queries in this area of work, the grant. And you also see that this current financial year, we started also the outreach program of going to provinces to support them even better. But this was a good thing that year. We also created about 134 veterans, if you remember, what we call permanent or contractors. Before then, you will remember that we had about 1,000 something people, but all of them were being paid like 850 or 500, and they were not paid well. And we changed the scenario, and we said fewer people but better paid and more committed to the work that we do. And that happened in that financial year. We also trained 2,179 educators, and we still have capacity challenges, but as I have indicated, we are now sending teams to provinces to support them and also to audit them. And the audit indicated a lot for us, because it is very bad chair that only when you go on a parliament municipal campaign and you hear complaints, and then you have to write to me to complain that these things are not being attended to, and only then I'm reacting, because I'm dependent on what the provinces say. If I say they're not giving me their salary card, if they say things are okay, I take their word for it. So now we go out to check and satisfy ourselves that indeed the things that they say are happening are indeed happening, and the things that I agreed about, and that's part of what the OCD is about. We held the National School Support Appearances. This year, the review was 10 to 15 December at the University of Pretoria. Only 9 codes were played. As you will know, about 3,272 learners, males, female, and those with disabilities, as well as support staff, about 5,000 people. As you see, in the current financial year for the December 2013, we have surpassed the 10,000 mark by simply increasing 3 codes. So this championship is growing quite quick. And we also introduced the Minister's Bazaar, and 14 learners were selected on the December 2012 tournament. They have since been placed in the sport worker schools and are being supported fully. The bazaar is continuous from grade 8 until the grade 10, and then it also goes on if they are going to do sports science and other things at universities and they become athletes in the university. And that is what we are also doing with the country. We have had some challenges during this period, and those are some of the key challenges you may be aware about. We still have a shortage of empires. There's still weak community sport structures to support school sport, and there's also still inadequate support and participation by parents, particularly black parents. The only parents we see at this championship are white parents, sorry to say, but that's the truth. And the absence of facilities, especially for rural schools, prohibits them from signing up for the championship. So we had about 50,000 schools of the 24,000 registering for this league in this year under review. So that's also growing. Let me now move to performance information quickly. I will not cover everything. I will just raise only one big issue. The management sub-program, we scored for the first year of reviewing by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the presidency on the MHAT, the monitoring score, we got a 3. So the scores work like this. There is a score of 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4. There's no 0, there's no 5. So the lowest score you can get is a 1, and the highest score you can get is a 4. There are no departments in government that have scored a 4. Even Treasury has not scored a 4. So we are among sport and recreation among only 6 departments that got a score of 3. So we were quite happy with the scores, because the other departments we scored a 3 with are more what we can call service delivery departments, but it is that department of Minister Chavani, monitoring and evaluation, it is the Treasury, it is the Department of Public Service and Administration, and they have environmental affairs in it. And they also have minerals, and 6 is us. And that is, the rest of the departments got 2s and some got 1s. Of course, we will be happy to be scored by the overall committee in this regard. But what important is that all the targeted 11 institutional performance reports were managed and reports were produced as we had expected. And we ran in the management sub-directorate projects targeting women, rural communities, experience on what is called some programs. And we had also established a number of task teams to work on different areas. Let me move to the issue of the UN priorities. South Africa has taken the leadership of the UN Sports Working Group for Peace. And since then, we had created a strategic tool for the whole world, and that has not been accepted. And we are confident that the Council and Geneva will now approve the tools. So we have done a lot of work there. And as you know, we also held our work around the WADA conference, and we have done a lot of work in respect of that. Let me now move to communication and information. In this area, as you know, we are one of the few government departments that get communication right. Most of the time we are spot on it. There are a few times we have little boo-boos there, but most of the time we are spot on and manage to get the bulk of our news out. In fact, by the size of our department, we are punching above our weight by exposure and by the number of notional hours on air. So we think that we are doing quite well then. And this is a result of targeted lead marketing and communications events that we had, and the special partnership we have now created with SABC Sport. Each February we have a friend retreat with them, and we present all our programs and we put them in the categories, and we add them the non-negotiables which they must cover and the programs they must utilize. So that partnership has worked quite well. In respect of health services, we did a number of this year under review. We had a few lunatic times to sue us, but as usual, we still maintain a good record. We still have zero cases lost. We never take people to court, but those who dare to take us to court, none of them have ever succeeded. And as is, that situation still rests like that. And the key work that is being done here now is around the legislation we are bringing after elections in this regard. Most of the legislation, particularly the amendments to the Sport and Recreation Act, are already raised, but the leader of government business has said that they will not be dealt with as current legislation. We'll have to wait until after the election. Let me move to the program and the chief financial officer. One of the major measures, government measures as well, is the issue of how well and how quick do we pay suppliers. And President has said that the DGs who don't pay suppliers on time and within 6 days must be charged. So we took this seriously. Our target remains 30 days as we require. But for the whole year under review, the average was 30.7 days. And this score is not a score we give ourselves. It's what the treasury gives to each and every department, what we have scored, because they look into our system of payments and they check the invoices vis-a-vis the payments and they look at how long it has taken. So we are among the very few departments who achieve that score. I think that too has been a great improvement from the times we had the number score of 52 days to 13.7. It has been a great improvement. I'm sure you'll see that. Right now, the CFO can tell you that when we're looking at the average scores for the current financial year we're in much better. We are at 27.3, so I think the improvement is there and the system is working. And right now we have also finalized the turnaround time for orders. We are reduced it to a working 14 days to about 14 days. So we procure very quick for those days. We do things much better. And of the companies targeted with 70% for BEE, 46% has been achieved in this regard. So we are procuring that. Many departments benchmark BEE at 30%. We benchmark it at 70%. So we are doing quite better than many in this regard. The other issue was the accuracy of the assets register, which the Treasury has introduced as a new measure to measure us. We scored 84.9% because the first time we were short, and then we wanted to know. Since then, this current financial year, we had a big, we said everybody, everybody must, that day stop for half day, and we're counting all assets, and we're getting the assets register right. So we are in now that we have done the changes to see what the percentage score would be. We think we should score relatively above 95%, and more vacancy rate should be 93% for you to be okay with the auditor general. So we think that we should be able to score way above 95% this time around. In terms of risk and the internal auditing, 8 reports all in all were produced and they were adopted fully. This action remains quite important to us in ensuring that we are on route to achieve an audit by the end of the current financial year. Of most importance, Chair, is that we have elevated the issue of risk management. Now all the actors in our department are risk owners, and we have made sure that the risk management is a standing agenda item on all our major management meetings. Let me move to celebrations. 58 targets of the 70 received financial support. Other two did not meet our minimum requirements. Generally, we have achieved the whole target in this regard. But softball still remains under administration during this year. Even now, they are still under administration. And also Karachi. Even Karachi is still under administration, but this financial year, they have just qualified, just applied last week. I think now we'll be able to give them money, but as we are taking Karachi out of the doldrums, athletics is going back there, you know, so we have challenges there in respect of that. Of most importance is that this financial year we also introduced the EPG, the Eminent Talents Group on Sports Transformation, and they began their work this financial year. And we also adopted the SOAR cards as well as the transformation cards. So these were delivered to the federations and they all signed up to the charter. And we have done the first assessment. I think you see the minister will several right now publish the first barometer, transformation barometer. We have targeted only the top big five codes, football, rugby, cricket, athletics, and netball. Only those are the ones that have been assessed in the first round. And now that we have a working formula, we will expand to the other 16 in due course. Let me move to the issue of scientific support. Look, in this area, we've done a lot of work. Of importance is the talent identification program that we started, and we also put money for the first time in a conditional grant to ensure that the provinces are able to start training talent scouts and also identify talented youngsters for incubation. I have to indicate that the Eastern Cape Northwest did not submit reports, while Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Western Cape submitted reports with no information on this specific indicator. So this is still a big problem. I think in the new area for the provinces, they are struggling. But this was that financial year. And now the current financial year, with the support we are giving to the provinces, most of them have started reporting on this, and they are training talent out. So unfortunately, this thing that I'm far apart from each other, by the time I present here, a lot of things have been overtaken by Uganda. Let me also, in the jealousy of time, share, move to sub-program 3, which is community spot. And there too, I'll also give just the highlight. We achieved 68% compliance against the target of 100% regarding the responsibility for mass participation grant. This was the financial year. Now, as I've indicated, it has improved significantly. The other important thing was the national incomes that we did, and we managed to get in this financial year all the 9 provinces having the youth camps. It's only in this financial year that the Northwest didn't have theirs on time. But later, after we told them that we're stopping the grant, they have implemented, and then only then the youth camp of Northwest had happened. Lake Mariko? Somewhere. Let me move to the issue of community sports. Here is an area where we have not achieved what we targeted to achieve. We wanted in recreation programs to have active participants of 3.3 million. We only managed to achieve 1.7 million of that. So it's an area we have to do much more on to get the people tied. Provinces claim that if we take what they submit to us cumulatively, we will buy 5 to 3 million. But when we want proof that these people have really participated, the proof that only comes out of references made one person. So we have to stick with what we can vouch. What they say that no testimony, it doesn't help the situation that it was with them. We want to see an assisting either by ID number or the register or the name people register, participant register, or something that authenticates that indeed these people participated. Because we have to put resources as a output. Let me also move to the issue of jobs created on the ground. We set the target of 400 jobs. We only achieved 34. It means that there is room for provinces to still hire more people. Unfortunately, we don't hire staff on the ground. The important thing is that we had a target of only 4,000 schools registering to participate in the school sports championship last financial year. But as I indicated earlier, we exceeded that. We have 15,600 schools participating. Now I'm going to move to the other issue that we've already spoken about. Along with, chair now move to the financial aspects of this. That will be on slide number one of this. Yeah, I think it's that slide. Chair, here we show you the human resources by programs and where we are. And this will tell you why it was important for us to restructure. Because if you compare in program 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, program 1 administration, but you'll see that program 1, a number of approved posts were 155. So administration alone has so many people, but the core functions of the department has so few staff members. So how do you keep with this juncture? So the idea was to move as many staff members as possible to core life functions and to reduce on administration. By salary bands, you'll also see in our department, as you are aware, we do not have levels 1 and 2, and our entry requirements are very difficult because we are a specialized land function. Almost everybody who enters, including our interns, minimum junior degree. So that makes it quite difficult, but we are also a good employer because we don't pay people those 54,000 rand a year. We start paying when it's start getting serious. So I think that is the one good thing. In respect of the levels, there you would see, again, it confirms more or less the same thing. And you'll see that in the higher salary grants, unlike many departments, we have much more few people. For instance, we only have only one DG, and we only have very few chief directors. You know, so as you are aware, we are not top heavy. We are heavy in middle management, which is really the engine of government. Let me now move to the financial stuff. I'm starting on slide 57, expenditure against budget. You will see that in the data comparative analysis, in 2010-11, we spent 99.7% of our entire budget. 2011-2012, we spent 98.8%. And by 2012-2013, we spent 99.2% of our budget. So you see our commitment we made that we will spend all the money we have. I think the biggest thing is to overspend. So we try as much as possible not to overspend, but we try everything to spend as much of it as what we have, because we can't pay for more money unless we spend the little that we have. You know? And I think that has been the principle that kept us. So we are spending almost all our money, and we are spending it responsibly in this regard. In terms of the programs, in administration, we spend 98.1% of the whole budget. In sports support services, 99.2%. And mass participation, 99.5. And in international liaison, 99.6. And facilities, 67.4. So you will now see that now we set a drive to roll out facilities. That 67.4, this financial year, will also be in the region of 99. So we will most likely again CFO is here. We are doing already financial year procedures and we're collecting all invoices and we are paying. So most likely we'll finish all our money. This is the such financial year we are worried about not overspending a little. We just want to just be low. So but the pressures are quite high to finish up everything that we have. And by development and economic classification, we still spend the bulk of our money, as you are aware, on transfers and subsidies. Our capital assets are quite very small, and because once we have built the facility, we don't always transport and recreation, we transfer it to the beneficiaries, whether management, a school or whoever. So they don't really become our capital assets, so we transfer. So that's why we spend the bulk of our money by economic classification, as you may see. In terms of transfer payments, we transferred, I think these are the major transfers we pay. The DORA is the provincial grant. Out of our budget, you see that constitutes about 50% of all our money. It goes to the provinces via the transfer. Then books in South Africa and the South African Institute of Graduate Sport. Then we spend about 32.2 million on Love Life. And you know the fights we used to have with them. Now we have restructured the priorities very well and they are very complementary to what we do now. And then 149 million went to the national federations. We transferred all of it. Even for the two that didn't comply, we took the money and redistributed it to the other federations that needed the money the most. Then for the Akron, Chebuli Metro, Nelson Mandela Bay, Rustenburg, Mbombela, and Johannesburg, we only transferred those figures to them to give the games. And the provinces, that's how the transfer is run. And as you know, Northern Cape still remains our adopted child, and we take from the rich and give to the poor. So the amounts you see in the bracket there, the 661 from Eastern Cape, 741 from Gauteng, and 915 from Limpopo, were adjustments, and all that money was clustered together and given to Northern Cape. So this is a budget sacrificing scheme that all the HOEs and the MINMAG agreed to because of the peculiar challenges Northern Cape is facing. And if we just follow the equitable share formula, then Northern Cape there will be no spot. So we have to, for them, that little money is too huge by the size of their budget. So it complements much more significant. Let me now conclude, Chair, and move to the fact that during the financial year under review, we had eliminated the year before this one. You recall that we had the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We also had an authorized expenditure of 700,000. We had also irregular expenditure. And irregular expenditure then was about 380,000. We have managed to eliminate fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We have managed to eliminate our authorized expenditure. We were left only with irregular expenditure of only 7,200. We are even more convinced that we eliminated the current financial year when we come to it. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. DJ, I think I'm going to give opportunity to members to interact, but I just want to, just as before I give over, to indicate that we understand that the mandate of the National Department is to develop policies and framework for the provinces and the main internet of other provinces. And I think this is where our question is going to be because we represent provinces. Maybe the language that you are speaking should be different from the language that we're going to speak because we are from provinces. And where we expect that provinces are the key implementers. And it will take us maybe for the national department to tell us how do we monitor. Because most of your budget is transferred. So I really, but let me allow members to interact with the your meeting. Honorable Ranto. Let me just
much, Honorable Chairperson.
DG, my first question would be on page 80. The Minister's Food Growth Budget Fund was launched. My question would be, does the fund get appropriated in the Departmental General Budget, or is funded from the Office of the Minister as an initiative from his office? Is the fund sustainable?
Question number one, I'm not sure. Question number two, page 19, absence of facility in especially rural schools.
Does the department budgeted for the fourth facility in the rural schools, or is the department depending on sponsorship as well? That is the second question I'm not sure. Another question on page 29. Did the department hire an unqualified employee at the substation? Where are employees that are trained in Mutsu? That is the third question on Chairperson on page 29. Page 24 on our Chairperson, please you mention all the provinces that were not doing well, but never say anything about the police. Where I'm seated, maybe our teaching that today is doing very well. If the case, I'm going to be fine. Five, Honorable Chairperson, on the issue of the audit opinion. For the past 3 years, the Eastern Cape, Limpopo and Northern Cape Roses Department have received qualified audit opinion. And the question is, how long will the department allow to this happen? What has the department done to have their problems to address is a problem.
I don't have that much questions, Chairperson, but I just want to raise some few issues. As you have said that we are coming from provinces, maybe our questions will be not national questions. They will be specific to our provinces. I'm from Eastern Cape. I was once a teacher at Stelfton School, Primary School. The school has a tennis ground. But in the tennis ground, you find also a netball ground within the same ground of the tennis. It is mostly used for netball because coaches of tennis, they are very few. So people ended up not having the interest of that sport. But with what I have heard here of people that are being trained, given opportunities, I think those opportunities will be given also to those rural areas like Spectrum. But I want to know the fact that there are two sport grounds in the same ground is going to help us, because I think of maintaining that ground. The more sport that is being played in that ground makes it disadvantageous for the other sports to be played on the same ground. Is that the right thing to do? Because that school is a school from the previous government. Also. You said in your presentation, DG, you all are focusing on, you all are focusing now on karate, and then the athletics is going back on Zoltan, if I heard you correctly. But what I want to check with you, DG, if the other sports coach is taking off ground correctly, is there, do you lift the monitoring of that? money to a certain person. I'm saying I was a teacher before. We were given money that was called 621 money in school. And that money was calculated on what should be done. And the department was expecting that everything that has been tabulated in that matter of that year is expected to be done on that year. I was also not sure you mentioning anything, maybe I've missed it, mentioning anything about the disabled, or because the disabled is the people with disabilities group. Are you actually in your target in those people? If are our provinces operating in working with you in developing sports in those people or that are disabled? I see that we have an international movement for health day that is specifically for you have an international one. I just want to check, are you going to have a national, or do you have a national day for health? That is specifically now focusing on rural areas, because this was international. I understand it was in Cape Town. It was the state of it wanted it to be made to be in Cape Town because it was an international event. And also, you were checking levels of fitness for your people. I was just checking on you if you have checked your own fitness. Are you also taking part in the program?
Providers because of
the reason that is given, the swim is caused by payments made to high performance institutions that are not classified, although they are state institutions. It confuses me. Maybe the language is too high. If you can just put it in a simple language that I will understand so that we know how to go forward. The second thing is that I must really applaud you on your internal audit charter. That is doing a good job. And I wish that could be transferred to the provinces also. Because that is the way that we should go to avoid the AG always putting us on the ring. And maybe if those skills can be transferred and maybe share with the provinces and to do that. Now, the fourth point is that do not submit the required documentation. And it's a problem. What happens if that happens? Or what measures have been put in place that you need to have those sports bodies really sticking to the requirements thereof? On school sports, which is the last one, on school sports, the school sports, we don't see it moving anywhere. I'm not sure as to whether it is because they see a need for the Department of Basic Education and you to have a way on how to deal with this. But I must say that from where we stand, it's not doing very well. And more especially with the conditional grants that are given to the district and so on, I'm not sure if we can suggest Chairperson that this conditional grant may be reset so that they go and do that specific job. Because you go to a district level, the sport money is not utilized correctly. In some way, it shifted to other things, but it came from national health as a sports fund, a conditional grant. So there's something that must be done at that level, because we need to see it, especially in our area, in our rural areas. And having said that, maybe we also need a breakdown of the trainings that have been done by national, like training of teachers in different provinces. If we can get that breakdown, I'm not sure it's in this book, but I do go thoroughly through the reports that we have here. Even the learners who participated, we need that breakdown also. So, lastly, let me just say, this department is really doing its best, and we believe that you are coming up now with policies that will also focus on the disabled and the women. We know you are trying, but at national level, yes, the plans are there. Implementation at lower levels. How do we monitor them? How do we make sure that it happens? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Support. This DGFI has over. I think what one picks up from the members is that at the national level, we see what is happening. But the challenge lies at the provincial level, where those are the key implementers. DG, I just want to check. One is interested on the issue of physical education. Your relation with sports and basic education. How far have you pushed this thing to the extent that physical education becomes a subject at the level? The issue of transformation. Transformation can happen since then as my subject at this age. Gigi, I'm very old, that's when you know. But when we talk about transformation, are we missing a point? Because personally I feel that if we have to talk about transformation, we have to start it at a tender age. But how do we transform when we go to our public schools in townships where there's no mind shift, where when we talk about sports, only talk about soccer and netball. And our children grow with that, for me as a black person, I
talked about, we understand that most of your budget, it goes to the provinces, it goes to the provinces. But one sometimes wonders whether at the provincial level, do we do profiling? Because there's this tendency that schools will be called, principals will be called to one area, and even kids, your equipment, and you don't know what you get, it's only soccer, cricket, you know, but you ask yourself if you got this kid and you don't even have a facility. How do you expect that the learners are going to use that or the teachers will be able to you know, to teach sports at school level? The other thing is that we've got a challenge, this is a reality. One is more interested from now from sports. Your engagement with these teacher unions. Do you engage with teacher unions? Because the person that, you know, they don't want to take extra classes like after school to do sports with children, then they say that it's extra time. Is there any move of maybe you don't want to engage? Or because every time they talk about extra, what is overtime, but I'm interested, is there any move from the Department of Sports and Recreation to engage this teacher unions? Because you find that when you go to this, I don't know how to call this school, but primary school, where it's five teachers can teach sports, but when you go to primary school, teachers don't want to commit to that. Precisely because of unions. There's nothing wrong with unions, but I don't want to say. That is GCM, so each of the facilities, access to this facility, you, in the report, you indicate that you agreed to reinvest the 15%, but at the municipal level, I don't want to check because there was a time when you reported that you had a sort of a corner when we were talking about this NIC. But we are still having a challenge where, either at municipal level, people are not even allowed to use this community hall. I think it's something that we have to change. We can't be having a community hall where the community are not even allowed to use that facility. How do we achieve this, encourage our people to do a training if they are not even allowed to have access to their facilities? And lastly, the issue of the facilities at school. Most of the schools we want visit are no facilities. That literally there's nothing.
Thanks. Chair, I'll ask my colleagues to respond to some of the questions. I'll answer some of them that have been raised directly with us. The issue, Honorable Mushoji, of the school sports battery, it is called the ministerial sports battery, but it is not necessarily the minister's job or is or allocated into his office. It is a departmental program. It is part of the school sports program. All in all, we recognize that we have actually classified schools into three types of schools. And this now we are talking public schools. You will have what we call a generalist school. This is a school, normally the school governing bodies in terms of the South African Schools Act are the ones that decide what sport is played at school. And I think this is where the biggest challenge is. It is the Schools Act that gives the authority to a governing body. So this governing body, if it decides that we are a football school, we can urge or encourage or whatever to say, don't you want to also play hockey or don't you want to do this? But it is up to the governing body at its meeting to pass a resolution what sports is played in a school. And so those generalist schools are schools we don't bother because there are 24,000 public schools. So we can't engage with all of them at the same time. So we can only be selective about what we want to do. And so these generalist schools are, we leave it to the governing body, they vote and say, we are football, this others say we are netball, others say we are
football, netball, and swimming, this they had. Normally in a private school, there are about 8 courts being played. Generally in a black school or in a township school or public school, on average there are 2 courts being played, and largely predominantly it's football and netball. And this is historical. Most governing bodies in the area, that this is a football school. And they simply endorse what they find without changing. And even if they wanted to change the thing of school, often it is very difficult for them to decide to say, let's do swimming if they don't have a swimming pool. Passing such a resolution is not useful for them to do so. So consequently, the governing bodies make that decision about what is to happen. So there is general schools. Then we have what we call regional support school. There are 3 of these schools. These are schools that generally each and every district of our country, by geopolitical boundaries, they are blessed with facilities, and they have a rich history of playing sports and so on. We encourage them to open up their facilities to close by schools and to do outreach programs and to make sure that they share their facilities with the schools in the district. But also importantly, that they are supposed to also host district tournaments. Now, the biggest challenge with this is that while they are public schools, majority of the 53 schools are historically modules schools. That's how it is. We can't try and create those schools. They are just like that. They are and they are like regional hubs for us in schools for that purpose. The bigger problem was that opening our facilities to this level and other schools, who's going to pay for the maintenance? Because right now our maintenance budget can only cover our own needs, and that's it. Now, opening up to the rest, you are cheating us. So we have to agree with them on an annual grant. But those that they are claiming will just pass a resolution and say we are a regional support school. And they pass that resolution and they adopt the program and they sign the agreement with us. We will give them a grant, $150,000 a year per school, to maintain their facilities and to run their outreach program. So this is a dangling carrot, which we are still waiting. We are in the meeting with the principals only now in March. So we will talk to them and see how far they can go with this, and those that can sign up, whether the academic bodies will endorse the decisions. The pinnacle of this system is what we call a sport-focused school. Now, the sport-focused schools are not necessarily a district or a region. They are by coach. So we have prioritized 16 coaches. So we need 870 minimum of these schools. Right now, we only have like 340 of the schools. Because of the 16 schools, we are saying in tennis, there must be 2 schools per province. And we have a criterion. We are saying that it must already be having like a tennis court. It is to be a tennis court. It must be having a teacher already who is a coach in tennis. It must also have residential facilities. Why? Because all children who are selected on tennis in that province have to be routed to a school. So in that specific school, you end up with children who are there largely because they know how to play tennis. They are gifted in it. And so we can't build swimming pools in all our schools. We are a developing country with no natural resources. But we can build like 10 or 15 swimming pools in at least 2 schools per province. That's practical. That can be done and can be achieved. And you can imagine the level of competition in a school and the learners who go to that specific school because we're competing against the rest. And you can imagine the heights and the outputs the schools will produce of future champions in this regard. So we have begun the process of accrediting the schools. Once again, we have to work with the federation. So the federation got Africa and work much and faster. For instance, we have already accredited all their 80 schools in Ghana. So those schools are ready to receive learners. But the federation that are a bit slow and are limping and they are striking rugby. We are talking that 18 minimum. Rugby is already on 28 schools. Cricket is already in 47 schools. So what I'm contrasting and saying is that even with football, why so many schools play football? But right now, we have 0 sport focused school for football. Because that's a, you know, it's a touch and go.
So and we can't impose the schools on the federation. We have the federation that has to agree that this is the right school. And in addition to that, once the school is identified, the principal is only engaged then, and only then you must table the resolution and the governing body. The governing body has to agree that first and foremost in this school, we may pay other schools, but first and foremost we are a football school. So this is not an easy process to get the governing bodies to approve, particularly when basic education is not pulling its weight around these people to say so. So the learners who come to the national championships are then selected by the talent scouts. The talent scouts are not waiting for us, they are waiting for the federation. They come there, and the system we are using is the high-end system. It's not the easy inroad one. We say for each match, there must be 3 talent scouts watching the match. And both the 3 scouts must actually, all of them, identify you. And all of them must on a minimum score you above 30. So, for you to be identified as a talented person. So you may be, but you may be that only 2 scouts identify you and the 3rd one has not. You will not end up on the first. All 3 at any time. So when I say there are 14 selectors across my school, you must know that it means that there were scouts standing like this, watching that match, and with notes, and they are all scoring, and they see the same thing. So if 3 of them see the same thing in you, then we are confident that must invest in you. It means you have a promising talent. And so this is what has happened. So look, learners, once identified, we only receive their names, and we take the money, and we start paying for them. But our concern is simple. If you are a rugby player, then you must go to that school. If you are a cricket player, then that school is the closest to you. And that's where we want to pay for you, and that's where you're going to get better training, that's where you're going to get better support. And this is what we have been doing. And even from a point of view of gym equipment, high performance training, all of that, we have been specifically targeted at investing in this school, the sport focus schools. So I think the better thing is how we grow. Is it sustainable? We think yes. We think it's the first element in terms of our academic system. The sport focus schools are at an entry level of academic system. So it is the first time a youngster gets exposed to high levels of coaching, proper equipment, proper work, only because he's talented. So this bazaar, we don't emphasize, we don't want the child, we don't say he must have a B in math or a C in science or whatever other bazaars do. We are saying you must be talented on the sporting field. And the other condition is that you must just pass. I don't care even if you pass with a 53 or a 54, as long as you perform there and you pass, you progress, I agree, the bazaar will stay. So the key issue is your competency and responsibility. So that's how the bazaar scheme is done and is allocated. On the issue of the whether we have not hired unqualified employees, I think this is a problem of the whole of government. You've inherited some people who came in somehow, and also the system of governance. You have the ministries where people enter by the ministerial handbook. They come in and they are not required degrees or anything whatsoever, and that minister leaves and he says to the new minister, please man, can you sort out my people? And then the new minister says, yeah, but I don't want them in my office, offload them to the department, and then I must deal with my own. And then he brings a new crew as well, and even when he leaves, that new crew must also be offloaded. So what do you do perpetually with this unqualified people? You have to place them. Well, I don't know, but it's a practicality of what we are seeing. So if you're a DG, you notice that aspect, and you say, okay, what do I do with that case scenario? Train the employees, redeploy them to where they can be useful, and that they add value, you know. And in many instances, they have already been taught it, because people who are in the ministries, somehow they are always appointed on the last notch and the last everything, and so it's amazing. But and then they come this time, and so you compare the junior employees to them who are highly skilled than them, and there is a disjunction, and that may cause unhappiness in the system. You have to find a balance and program. I guess it's a whole problem of government, but that's how I can respond. Something unavoidable. Already now we are doing the handover for the new government. We are starting reports. In terms of the handover guidelines, under employees in ministries, they are saying, the guidelines are telling me that I must develop mechanisms to absorb those staff in the ministry. So So you can see already that I'm going to have to look in there, who's here? Who's not taken by the new minister? And then I must accommodate those in the department somehow. You know, so this is what the guidelines from the presidency are saying. Next issue is the question of where the Free State really is. Is it doing well? The Free State is largely doing well, I must say. And I think largely in school sports, they are quite busy. They are very organized, their system is very, very well. And also from an accountability point of view, they have a clean audit now. It's Fairland Houghton who have a clean audit and the Western Cape. They have a clean audit. They are okay. We are happy with that. They've got weaknesses here, like all other departments. They've got weaknesses here and there, and I think this is where we stand with them. On the issue of the other provinces that get qualified with opinions and what is it that we do, look, just this morning, me and my colleagues were actually having a debate and a discussion about whether sports should really be a concurrent function, yes, no, like we are now, because departments like justice and regional offices and the command structure is the same, and it's all the institutional capacity, institutional culture, everything the same. Same values, same set, same everything. But which spot? Our silver eagles are provinces. We are a ATM of sorts. We dish out the money. But when it arrives there, there's another sphere of government. It's provinces now. Now the provinces have their own way of doing things. The institutional culture in provinces is the same. Just this financial year, the current one, when it started, we were having a big fight with the Premier of Mpumalanga, who said, away with the Dora Grant framework, you my MEC, as long as you want to be MEC, you take all the money from national government and you spend it all of it on facilities and only in these two districts, you know. And I wrote, I said, well, go ahead, Ms. HOG, I don't deal with the MEC or the Premier, you can proceed. But I can't suppress criminal charges if you vary the law. That's all I'm going to do. And I wrote it down and I said, it's great. I was friendly there. That I'm going to press criminal charges, you can answer for yourself in court. I'm not going to be debating this issue. Here the law says I'm the transferring officer, and I set conditions. Here are the conditions. You comply with them, or you face them. Choice is yours. And then I didn't have a debate. After a lot of wrangling and calls with the minister and everything, I was just saying to the minister, please don't interfere. This is administration. And then suddenly she prevailed, and all of a sudden, everybody was happy that they are willing to implement according to the conditions. And because we couldn't have such a thing. And which brings me to the second issue. I do not have really too much control, other than the conditions I said. The only conditions I can enforce is those ones. And if I set a condition that says you are obligated to get an unqualified review opinion, the tragedy of that is that the province that doesn't get it, it means that the next financial aid for him that. And in that scenario, that condition may also work against me. Because then I have no way of persuading the province to move forward. I have locked them out of the system. And you could imagine if I lock about three provinces out. Well, the others will be happy. They'll be rewarded. I'll take the money intended for 2001 to distribute to this one. But there will be no support in those provinces. And the reason I'm saying so, and this is a much more important thing to raise in the National Council of Provinces. Why? Because of all our provinces, only three budgets from their own equitable share, they budget for sport. The other six are fully dependent on the grant, which we give. If that grant was to be removed, there would be no sport in those provinces. Because there's no, their provincial treasuries don't allocate any money. They say to those departments, I'm nationally giving you money. So we've got other treasures, we're going to spend money. So sport, although it's a concurrent function, which means that the provincial treasury must also budget for it. In practice, that doesn't happen. So, and that is an issue which must be challenged with the treasuries and the premiers and everybody and the agencies for finance in provinces, because this is a serious setback. The only KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and Free State who budget their own resources for a province and say, there's the grant national, there's our contribution, take it together, work, you know. But in all the other things, that doesn't happen. So which is the key issue challenging us in this regard. Honorable Ramto, the issue of the tennis court that is also being used as a netball court, in fact, this is what we encourage, the multiple use. And that is why we are rolling out multi-purpose sport courts. And the court that now we are rolling out, at least 5 sports may be played on that court. The secret lies in this. In the schedules. For teacher must say, netball time is Tuesdays from this time to that time, and basketball is this time to that, tennis is this time to that, tennis by this, by that, volleyball this time to that. All of them use the same surface, same court, different lines, you know. That saves money, it saves time, it makes our rollout quicker, it encourages already, other than football and netball, which Honorable Chair is complaining about, it affords an opportunity to play 5 alternative courts almost immediately. By provision of one court, just 1 million. 1 million later, children can play 5 courts then in a traditional area that's not like that. And we also researched tremendously, and we and the Sports Trust, as our delivery partner for this, have found a good court, which the surface of it, one plate, is strong and good for the good 25 years guaranteed. No maintenance, all the children introduced to sleep. It's only the lines that have to taken only once every 5 years. And this is because they're out in the open, rain and sunshine and what. But if we put it indoor, as an example, that same court, then the lines are there for 6 years. You know, they're not going to disappear. So these courts are hardy materials, and they are also good on the knees of the children. Because we are cognizant that in the schools we are rolling the bus on, the children can't afford well cushioned techies and shoes. So some of them would play barefoot and some would play with ordinary school shoes. They must not later in life have joint challenges and knees, ligaments and all of that. So the cost themselves are designed in such a manner that they are well cushioned. It costs a lot of money, about $1 million to roll it out. But we were looking at how much it is to set up a tennis court here, a volleyball court here and everywhere else. And then we realized that we will need about $3.2 million to do all of those separate one is ten court. So this that could be cost for 1 million only if a court set. And so that's what we're doing out right now. So that's what we must encourage. Only thing is that part of training the teachers as coaches is also teaching them sport administration, the basics. How to do a rooster. Such a simple thing. How to do a rooster or when volleyball will play. And to also advise them, the volleyball match takes this one. It has 8 quarters. So it needs this much time to play. So it means that you are training for a day is this long. So don't put volleyball on a Wednesday. Because then by the time the children finishes, your learner transport has already left the children at school. No. So put it like on a Thursday, where the classes end earlier, and then you have all this time to play. No. So we are teaching them those type of things. The other question about the national federations that they are tracking, we jump them once, they pick up a little bit, and then they regress. No, we don't actually do that. In fact, we support all federations. The only problem is that we can only do this much. I think governments right across the world are struggling with this issue. The balance between an interpretation of so-called interference vis-a-vis intervention. So when they need money from us, they say, hey, government has decisively intervened. You know, that's okay, because we pay their debt and every other thing. But when they are fighting over money, and we want to come and intervene, they say, no, we are interfering. But South Africa is a member of the IOC and the Sand Olympic Charter. And that charter says that we must leave the administration of sport outside government. So the CEOs and executives of the federations have this. One good example is athletics. In athletics, we intervened. When it was at London Trinity and Malokhub and his friends put themselves and his friends for one run, there all sorts of stories. We intervened there. And we were promised that this new executive led by events was going to be the best thing that happened to athletics. But it's really. Didn't take us long before new scandals emerged that they too are paying themselves bonuses without this, that. And now we are on the tier 5 between us, events, and the IWS. We are saying that we want to investigate. The IWS says we will suspend South Africa if we investigate. Same thing, FIFA and SAFA. There's a match fixing debacle. Minister wants to investigate the match fixing, and FIFA says, not so weakly, you know. So I'm saying there's so much we can do in support of the federation. If the support is requested and is welcome, we always work better with such federations. Basketball is a good example. Basketball too, I see the dollar grams there, 30 million in the red, they couldn't account for money of the lottery. People were supposed to go to jail and everything and so on. And they came and pleaded and said, Minister, we need help. So they voluntarily surrendered. And we started working with them to rebuild basketball. In no time, we even introduced for the first time a professional league. The National Basketball League was played and was very successful. That season is coming. So all I'm saying is that we can only do this much from that point of view. We can't do much. With the provinces that are not complying, what are we doing with them? Honestly, the only strategy I have is to withhold money. That's all I can do to them. And that's what we have been doing. We have been withholding money. I came before we introduced the policy, I came to this committee. I also went to the portfolio committee. I requested support. I said, provinces are going to complain. I'm asking you to stand by me. That have not transferred to provinces that don't comply. And the committee said, no, we agree to you. And I, since then, we are not transferring. Until the province complies and submits everything that is outstanding, it doesn't get its crunch. They have crunches in costs. Right now, we are supposed to have given them the first part of them by the 30th of January. Only five provinces, six complies. And we have only paid the six. And they know. I also like them. Come 28 February, you are still not compliant. You forfeit for good the guns for the year. Because I can't wait to surrender the money back to the treasurer. I must allocate it to other provinces that need it the most. You know, so, and I want to allocate it 2 days in, before financial year end. But this is in the month to spend the money. So come 28 February, you have still not given us everything you need. You will not get your fourth quarter grant. So today I have been harassing the CFO. They want to comply, you know, they are all calling because they have not received the money. I think this is the strategy and it works very, very well. You know, so I think that's where we are. Lastly, there is the issue of the tax for disabled persons. We have purposefully decided that we are not going to put disabled athletes into a little category there and have separate tournaments on them. For instance, in the 2012-2013 financial year, the school sports championship, of the 3,718 athletes who were participating there, I can assure you that 23% of them were men with special needs. Whether they are athletes, whether those with physical disabilities, or whether children playing wheelchair basketball or otherwise, 23% of all learners who were there were learners with disabilities. And we have made that a compulsory thing, that in all what we do, we must seek to always incorporate disabled athletes into this. And one of the major policy interventions we made was also of special funding for disabled athletes. And we also remember that during the Paralympics, when they came back, Minister said that they will receive the same prizes as able-bodied athletes received. And that we had also implemented in this financial year already. So yes, we are attending to that, and it is a major part of our work. The issue of the National Day for Move for Your Health Day, we have plans for National Day, yes. We are proposing to cardinals that the first Friday of October, because October is International Working Month, that cardinals declare that day a day of recreation. But it is not a holiday, it's not a public holiday. But we'll encourage corporates and everybody and schools and all the works to do a recreational activity on that day. So that we are pending for cabinet approval, and we will see it as such. And the International Move for Your Health Day will continue to observe it. We were not hosting an international event. It was our own domestic event on a day which all other countries of the UN are expected to do something to move for health or basically do exercises. So we chose the simplest form of exercise, and we did it inland in the township. And we did the triple drugs. And we did it because it has coincided. It was the day before the speech of, day before our budget speech, the minister's budget speech. So we just thought that it's best if we coordinate it here because we'll be here. So we did it here, but it will be rotated every year. And we do do it in partnership with the Department of Health. So that's pretty clear. On the issue of irregular and wasteful expenditure, what we attribute this to and what are we doing about it in provinces, again, the accounting officers there, the MECs must charge the HODs that they do that. Now, I'm afraid all the time that if I get the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, ministers will charge me. This is my fear, and I make sure it doesn't actually on my books. I get everybody to learn that nothing doesn't happen. So, provinces where an HOD doesn't fear that the NEC will act, if the HOD doesn't believe that you are charged, there will be no things. There will be no accountability. And perhaps, I don't know. But there will be such matters, you know, which has happened. I'm sure the chair and Honorable Hasmania from the Northwest, you know the problems of what's happening there. And I have had to decide I'm not intervening in any of those shenanigans. My insistence is simple. Let the programs be delivered. Let the things we agreed about be done. And I don't care whether how many times you change the HOD or whether you move people around or no one should come and say to me that I'm new, those things you agreed about, I'm not going to do them. It was your agreement with Kozo Kumalo, I'm not going to do this. It's not going to work like that. So I was very weak. I wrote very quickly to say, grant withdrawn, grant stopped, until we can have an honest conversation with each other. Because government was in succession in you. Even me, when I came here, I found that they had already agreed contracts were signed. They honored those things. I never said, why do they do this? I'm not doing this anymore. I have run the call, and we can change things as we go. This is how government is supposed to operate. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen. What are we going to do to get the knowledge management system going? I think we are far ahead already with this. It's part of the 7 program we're dealing with the CSIR. They are helping us and they are setting it up for us. At least, as we, having information is not so useful. The ability to apply that information and knowledge to achieve our goals is what is key. And this is what this system will help us with. And I think it's what Dr. Fandar said. Is working with the CSIR on. We will soon inaugurate the system. The issue of administration of school support in rural areas, look, we have challenges there. I think we are the first ones who admit. We did an analysis at the end of the 2015 schools for championship about the profile of the schools coming for our championship. Because this system is what we call the opt-in. Remember, school support in our country is not compulsory. I think that understanding must be clear. It is not compulsory. We are at the mercy of the South African Schools Act. When the democratic government came, we found that school sport was compulsory. And the democratic government passed a National School Sport Act. The South African Schools Act, when it was passed, it had a clause that says a parent must authorize for the child to play sport in school. So in public school, in private schools, what they do, and those who send their children to private schools know that at the beginning of the year, they tell you that this is the school's policy. The FGB has already passed and has already approved the codes that are going to be played there. So there will be any like 5 summer codes and 5 winter codes. And they say to you, your child must choose 2 in summer and at least 1 in winter. And they give you the form. And if the form doesn't come back, you can't register your child. You will not enroll the child. At the school. It is compulsory that child must play at that school because the FGB, which is the body representing the parents, has already voted. So you have technically voted on behalf of all the parents to say the children are playing sports. So in public schools, it doesn't work that way. There's nowhere where a child must choose that when I play football. And if he doesn't feel like he wants to play, he just doesn't play. And there's no mechanism of forcing the child to come and play. You know, so that too is a big problem. And with it, the challenge for us is that in rural schools, because this is a voluntary system, we use an opt-in. So we issue a call to all schools to say the league is open for registration for 2014, like it is now. So schools must actually see in the home and say, I am ready. Each year at the beginning, like now, we have like about 14 volunteers who see that basic education and they capture all the phones that come back and capture all the schools that say we want to play in the league. And when the league starts grinding, we count how many schools we have on the AMIS program, the schools management system program. And this is why I tell you with certainty that in the first year, we had 15,000 schools of the 24,000 playing. Last year, we had 18,000 schools playing. But when you look at an analysis of the schools, majority of them are urban-based schools. They are not rural-based schools. The few rural-based schools that come through, just play football and just by sheer tenacity of the youngsters. No apparel, no watch, no school uniform, playing on the pitch. They just go to football and they play their ass out. And when they come play on the soccer lawn and for the district tournament or something, they beat all these schools in town and so on. And these children, somehow miraculously, they end up at the province and they come to Mishnah, you know. And they are a spring case. And also they are a spring case because that shows you the oddness and the disjunction in the system, in our thing. So we know that yes, we can send the facility to rural schools. But we are amazing. Rural school teachers are the most committed. And even when you see the training of educators attending, it is the rural school teachers who raise their hands to say, I want to be trained as a coach. The urban based or particularly teachers in township schools don't really do that much. Which brings me a link to the issue of what the chair raises. Are we engaging with the teacher unions? When we did the school sport program, we called all teacher unions and we called the agency. Until we and the Minister of Education, we were not so on one-on-one. She felt that the teacher unions must be engaged by the education and not by what is the creation. Because first and foremost, we are there for basic education and for teaching children other than this thing, and that for them, sport is an adult. So we always have a challenge. The suspended DG of basic education, Bobby Subrayan, me and him had a nice gentleman agreement. He made an acknowledgement that DG, all your performance agreements, school sports in the summer. But you know, honestly, on mine, it is matric results, it is school sports is a footnote. So, I'm being honest with you, let's agree, my brother. Well, yes, we are school department because the schools are ours, the children are ours. But I'm going to give you the leeway. I'll open the gates slowly for you, you know. But I can tell you now that if I open the plug gates, me too, I'm in trouble, you know, for doing that for you. So I'm going to open. You enter the gates slowly, my brother. And so we'll build this thing. Don't be in a hurry. We will get there. And that is the strategy we were in. We would not be where we are today if we didn't go that route. Because there would have been obstacles every point and everywhere we are going. Because there is some historical contestation of where a school sport train belong. You know. Is it with sport and recreation or is it with basic education? And there is a view to accept oneself that this is basic education. Okay? Then we'll see where you'll get the teachers from. We'll see where you'll get the schools from. We'll see where you'll get this. But we were not prepared. I think even now with our policy shift, if you recall, Sports and Recreation South Africa before placed sport facilities in communities. Right now, since the engagement with municipalities and the first municipal conference on sport and recreation, we are shifting, we are placing the facilities in schools and we are donating them to schools, irrespective of the fact that the schools don't belong to us. But we want to do the right thing for the country. Frankly, we are sitting here, and I'm sure I'm speaking also on behalf of my minister. We don't really care who leads school sport. We just want it to happen. You know, and we just say that it isn't about the glamour of who is at the forefront or who's the succeeding one. We think that the country would not succeed. The entire prospect, even high performance, is hinged on school sport as a bedrock. If we fail on school sport, we're not going to achieve everything. Even what the chair says correctly, so we'll also not achieve our transformation against this school sport as a bedrock. So, but honestly, with the meager resources we have and with everything we have, 18,000 schools participating in this league is not a child play. But let me put it in context. 18,000 schools registered for the league is a major move. But it's not the whole 18,000 that participate. I must say, of the 18,000 that only 11,000 participated in the league. And this is an estimate. Why? because the schools themselves, the professors themselves, are not under the record keeper. They don't really keep the records very well, or even the teachers, but that school played against that one. There were these things and there were so many children, and that one played against that one. What I have realized is that the Department of Sport, even our own, sends their people out to a district, and they do district tournaments. Come, school, come here. This Saturday we are playing, right? And then the schools find their way, here and heaven, how they arrive there, right?
Yeah.
And they get to that corner, they play, they compete. Typically, what an official of the province does, he records only the winners in that district, and then he goes back. The other schools that participated are not recorded. Who lost and what? History only remembers the victors, that yes. Because that type of record keeping is what now we are insisting on. Because also even the OCHA general wants that part. Because we want to see who paid. And even when you are eliminated at the district level, I mean, district level like by March. So you are eliminated by March. Your school must not stop paying for the rest of the year. You know, your school must continue playing, even if it plays with local schools and so on. So the so-called local festivals must always be encouraged. But that doesn't happen that much. So last year, we sent to the provincials, we sent our SRSA managers to go and deploy them to all the nine provinces, to go and satisfy ourselves that indeed the provincial tournament are happening and the eliminations are happening. We must say, at least to be fair to Mpumalanga, Swaya went to Mpumalanga. One of the most organized provincial tournaments was done in Mpumalanga. The KwaZulu-Natal one was very big, but it had its own weaknesses here and there. But yes, provincials, they take place. I can vouch for it with my head and say yes. So we have agreed this year, we are not only monitoring the provincials, we are also going to monitor the district tournament. We want to see that at those districts, these schools will come and play, you know. And we are allocating money also for provinces to ensure that the district tournaments are hosted. So we are not big in investing money at the lower level of the tournament. Maybe that's why you are not seeing it. We aren't investing money to market the district tournaments or the provincial tournaments, but they do take place. We are marketing the national tournaments very big. And for the first time, this year, it was so easy. It was on SABC Sport. And they kept on playing over and over. I was very happy to see it in December playing that thing. So, and they show champions, they interview the youngsters, and on all other programs from there, what's for us and so on, they will interview one of the youngsters. So, it's a program for the future, it will happen. But I think, yes, we understand the limitations. Many schools will not participate. And also the attitude, the principal in that school doesn't sign up that form. That school will participate. And it's an option. And we can't force them to say, bring the children and so on. The other issue that was raised, I thought I should respond to everything. Okay, in short, the issue of state institutions and the issue of the, here we're talking about the universities. Universities are not classified as a BEE institution, but we do pay them because they are the only people with high performance status. They are state entities, so we're not supposed to count their BEE scores. If we do, we will achieve much more than the 46% you see we have written down there. It will be much, much higher because the portion of what you pay for high performance athletes is very, very high at universities. Then the other thing is the training of educators and participating in the breakdown that we will provide. I think we have all of that with SASOC, who have been trained where and what qualifications they end up with. And then let me link it also to the issue of the facilities training that we conducted. Which municipalities were this and did we see any significant changes? Yes, we did. I think let's start with the metros. One of the things we focused ourselves on last financial year was the issue of the World Cup stadium. And at the highest level, with the minister and with the managers of this stadium, we did. And I think it was also a week ago after Mandela painted the grass green, you know, we painted, and the sand was painted green there. Just to make it aesthetically pleasing when it was actually said, you know, but we called the meeting of the World Cup Stadium to understand what the problems were,
But then we had a special training for facilities managers. And we also wanted them to cross land from the others. And so since then, I'm sure you know, you have not seen any of the welcome stadium with that type of set. I'm just saying now, from a day-to-day management, a simple rooster of when to cut the grass, how often to water it, and all those type of things. You see the great improvement in that. And also, even in the secondary stadium, you see that. So we have decided to target the smaller municipalities now and to go to them and also provide that type of training. So we will continue on that type of setup. The issue of access to communities, this is a big problem. Most facilities don't belong to us. Each and every municipality right across the country has its own rules. And some provide some facilities for free, as long as you're booked on time. Some, like the Richmond Cape Town, rent out everything. Like the Old Tambo Sports Recreational Center, in Kailicha, Uganda, one NY1. To have up 10 kg, it's 7,800. Community events or youngsters deciding we want to play table tennis today, it's not going to be easy. So we have been engaging there. One of the resolutions of the first municipal conference on sports integration was to then say, if you are charging all the things like this, like this one day a week, who can it as an open day, where whoever wants to come can come in and play. Kicked out of there, and so were the rest of the others. They all accepted that resolution. Whether we translate it into the bylaws and get it there is what we must follow up and monitor and for them to get to that one. But they had to open the facilities for people to access them and to be able to use them. Or otherwise, categorized facilities, those that are free for use, as long as you have booked or you are an organized rancher, or those that require payment. Or even if there is payment required, it is the differentiated rates, you know, something like that. But we leave that to the cities to, because we don't have power over what customers pass and decide. We can only lobby them and ask them in that regard. The last thing, Chair, which was raised was the issue of the distribution of sport kits to schools where we just bring people and just distribute football and netball. That, unfortunately, will become the case all the time, because if the schools vote for football, then they are a football school. We have to give them the football kits. We have not. Imagine the day they say we are a football school and we send the friends shots and they are not going to be very happy with them. So we are guided by what the schools themselves select as the goals they want to play. And that's what drives our demand and our supply. So it is that demand that will solely deliver our supply. And the issue of PE is the last issue. Chair, let me be frank with you. There is no physical education in South Africa. The Department of Education insists that it exists. They say to us when we say we want it as a separate subject, they say it will cost the department 4 billion to introduce it as a standalone and money that they must have. It says they'll have to train new teachers, retrain the others that are there in the system, and so on, and have them as dedicated teachers. So they say it's happening as part of life orientation, and that the schools are the ones that select which period. It's a free period. It's a period for you know, all of the life orientation things, but experience tells us that that is not the case. At least Shumaya here has been a PE teacher in a previous life, so she knows very well, and I do, that what she used to teach children and what she used to do is not what we see with our children today. So, unfortunately, while we say the three pillars of a successful school sport program, one of them is PE, basic education must come to the party, must see that issue, and must actually agree that it will reintroduce the subject as a standalone subject. Because the problem with it being incorporated under life orientation, life orientation has like 9 modules. They have arts, they've got personal hygiene and health, they've got environmental education, they've got sports, if we are one of them, maybe, and they've got music and all of that, they've got community service and outreach. They're like the sort of things that they teach them. So if I'm a teacher of life orientation, and there's a dance soccer pitch there, which means in my flow share I must go take this kid there, in the period at 11, and I must still go back to class and still do this thing and so on, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say to the
teachers who understand and who know even when it's what value we with these children. And expecting these teachers to be some whiz kids who knows everything and all the nice things, they can teach music as well as they can teach dance and they can teach about environmental affairs and about all of this global warming and the West. And I think we're just asking too much of these teachers. And in addition to that, to also mean that then they must also do PE. Many children will be injured on those fields and they will, because they won't know. And you know, the apartheid teachers were very, very skillful about this chat. At school, I know, we didn't have facilities. But those teachers made no excuses. They were not bad children and obese children and all sorts of things. They did start the squad here and come, do from that, and they took us to that. They did the playground games. In addition, every one of those, they came with some stupid song. And all of this thing happened all the time. And we knew them. And even after school, we played them at home. And it became fun. And you didn't realize that your children were very easy. They were very creative. They made no excuses. So this is what I'm saying. In conclusion, I'm saying I think that basic education has to come to the party on this one.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and colleagues, the issue of monitoring of the conditional grant, as DG has indicated, we have a grant framework. It's very prescriptive in terms of how the provinces can spend the grant. And we send out our teams from Sport and Recreation South Africa to go out and monitor. And the teams that go out are made up of our mass participation unit and also our internal audit unit. So the mass participation unit will go out and monitor the performance information to see that whatever the provinces have put in the business plan that they are delivering. In addition to this, we also ask for quarterly reports from the provinces. And with their quarterly report, they have to also forward a portfolio of evidence. They have to show us the reports of those activities. They have to provide us with attendance registers of people who attend workshops, people who attend events and actively participate in their photographs, pamphlets, whatever it is. But I think importantly for us is those site visits that we do to the sites where the events are taking place. And Madam Chair, we must say that council's reports have also been very shocking. We found, for example, in the mass participation hub, where somebody is supposed to be a hub coordinator and coaching volleyball, you find that they put the two goals outside their house and they have people, parts of their family, only the participants participating. So those were some of the things you find. And then our internal audit team actually looks at the financials to make sure that the funding is spent for the purposes intended, to make sure that documentation is provided. In that way, Madam Chair, then we are able to make sure that when the grant is transferred, it's used for the purposes. There is evidence that the provinces can supply to us that shows us that the money is being used and that provinces are delivering to the intended participants as well. That's the monitoring and evaluation from our side as well. And I think, Madam Chair, from our side, in our condition, in our annual performance plan, we have catered for the conditional special entity separately, and all the targets that we have set there are what we have to actually make sure we deliver on. Previously, our targets, we were dependent on the provinces, and that really created a challenge for us, because if the provinces were not delivering on it, then as Sport and Recreation, we would then get a poor host on those things.
Thank you. Gigi, I think, you know, like when a sentence is said, we understand that this minister's department, the key implementer for the province. And it's where we have seen this thing happening, you know, that you, the issue of equipment, you go to a province, you ask yourself, but as a department, why don't you at least identify one school, give them a, you know, a paycheck. Instead of calling all the schools, you don't even provide them, you give them the equipment, which is irrelevant, you know. I think those are the issues that really one has to that the provinces really have to be creative. And
January 2 March. If you want to say that this is the last time, because the department wants to end, so that when they, you know, that's not the issue. That, you know, I know when is the right time for me, because then I know the department is under pressure of spending. This is the reality on the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you will transfer them, comply, but the reality is that you will get very fine. I mean, this is entitlement, even when you go into provinces, just to touch and talk to this ordinary people, check out the opponent, it's where you get the truth of what is happening. See, I think the issue of the entities, last when the department has said before us, we raised the system of the entities. We cannot, as this government, the reality is that this age, we are the ones who need children. And this, the policies or the entities are being used as a barrier. You know, if the school decide that we are not going to allow the school, I know they are constituted. And one thing that we picked up as this committee is that public schools, in most cases in our public schools, we have people who are not qualified skills and they are members of the SDGs. And they don't even have control or a say. Then, you know, that's a secret. That's really, that is why we call them separate. Minister, this thing cannot go on. We have to reduce some of the things. Really, I think this one of the issues that we have really to look into. The issue of the food cost and this committee. There was a memorandum of understanding between the two departments. But is it for formality? Is it for formality? Because where I'm seated, it's not about me or individual members here. We are concerned about our members. Because if they don't do anything, you go there for that vacation period, then they're supposed to be in class. After that, they go out, they don't have anything to keep them busy. That is why we are getting this challenge of grants and all this. So, because I think it's something that my wish is to have the two departments coming before this in the committee. Because it's not about this minister or this minister. We are here. I think we are representatives. We've got responsibility. I think honorable members is something that we have to. We can't be dealing with this because we do over there and we know the impact of this on the ground. so at least you know that this is what I've done for this community. Honorable members,